From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
If you want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank
Woo!
You.
Yeah.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the sun, white sand beaches, palm trees, surf, and pina coladas in the tropical and beautiful Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, sitting.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 16th of November, 2015.
You have an incoming transmission.
Welcome. I'm your Spectrum 360 host, Mark Skogman.
And hello to our listeners in Tampa Bay, Florida, in the United States. I'm associate producer and co-host Terry Weeks.
Hello, Florida. I am Rebecca Marisol.
Spectrum 360 is copyright 2015 by Mark Skogman. Copying and sharing the Spectrum 360 podcast for personal use is authorized and encouraged. On Spectrum 360 in this edition for Monday, the 16th of November, 2015. Focus of this program is all politics and a Spectrum 360 exclusive coverage of the environment. Of course, we're talking about the Florida Fracking Summit. And segment one, live in studio, the Spectrum 360 news summary in brief. Spectrum 360 will briefly discuss the news and events of the last week, including the Tampa Bay Fight for 15 rally and demonstration, the Richard Wolff speech, Veterans Day, the Friday the 13th, Paris, France terrorist attacks, Democratic Party U.S. presidential candidate debate at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa, and more. And then segment two, live in studio, co-host Terry Weeks will lead a segment on the aftermath of the Paris, France terrorist attacks and what's happening in the state of Florida already because of it. And a decision that's been announced by Rick Scott, which he can enforce, and which is going to make him, I think, look very foolish.
Stupid is what stupid does.
Yeah. That'll be segment two. And then segment three, the Jim Hightower commentary for this week.
Gosh, Americans don't need enemies like China when we've got protectors like Obama.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have to hear the whole segment to understand why we're playing that one, okay? And also, segments four and five will have, from the Florida Fracking Summit, the speech by Scott Smith, part three of our coverage of water issues from the Florida Fracking Summit, part three of the Scott Smith speech. Say that five times fast. When you have a cold.
It's been in the Florida Fracking in Fort Myers on Friday.
Oh, boy.
And when there is a spill event, they hire people and they add more water to dilute it, hence the testing. So the solution to pollution is not dilution. And the good news is, even if they dilute it behind, to try to get the detectable levels down so they can clear it safe, this water testing technology that we want to arm the world with doesn't lie.
And then if we have time and we can fit it in, we're also going to play an excerpt from a Cornel West speech. Cornel West was in Iowa over this last weekend and just yesterday afternoon gave a great speech in support of Bernie Sanders for president, a real barn burner. And Cornel West does this often, but this is an especially good one. He's a great speaker. I've seen him speak in person multiple times, covered him as a journalist multiple times, and I'm a fan of his and his speaking style and his speaking content as well. Great guy. Yeah, so that's what's on the program. And if we can get to it, we'll try to play the excerpt from Hardball with Chris Matthews, where Chris Matthews interviewed Robert Redford about the new film Truth, which he stars in as Dan Rather. Been trying to get to that for a couple of weeks. Well, actually, since last week. So that's the program.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to hightowerlowdown.org.
And right to segment one, the Spectrum 360 news summary in brief. And let's talk about the events of the last week. Starting with the Tampa Bay Fight for 15 rally and march. The rally and march by Tampa Bay Fight for 15 was conducted last week on Tuesday, which was 10 November 2015. In Likes Gaslight Park, which is the park that's right across from the Tampa Police Department office there. And that's an interesting place to conduct a rally like that. The stage actually faced towards the police department, which is on the eastern side of the park. And they had a rousing rally with several speakers, including Darden Rice, city councilwoman from the city of St. Pete, who spoke about the new anti-wage theft ordinance that's been enacted in the city of St. Petersburg. Very forceful speaker. She is flat out cool. And also, Professor Richard Wolf, who had just flown into town to speak, to do a speech at the Palladium Theater in St. Petersburg for WMNF as a WMNF fundraiser. He had just gotten to the airport and gotten off the aircraft, and he came to the park to speak at the rally for about 3 minutes.
That is so great.
Yeah, it was so great. That was an extraordinary effort by him to actually participate, even though the time frames were difficult. And that was great. I was able to listen to his brief speech there, and then I was also able to get some still photographs, and I've got video of that too, which we'll be putting up on the internet for you to see in the next few days. And so that was great. And then there was a unpermitted march around Tampa for about 7 to 8 blocks by the activists in the Fight for 15 coalition, led by Kelly Benjamin and others.
And there were quite a few people at that event, weren't there? How many people would you...
I counted the crowd. A good estimate was 120 people, which is a lot of people.
That is a lot of people for an event in Tampa.
Yes, it is. Stay close to the mics, staff. And yes, it was a great rally, well attended. A lot of people were there. There was a rousing march. They went to the county government center. They went to near City Hall and this big brick edifice there that actually is just a natural great speaking platform. And there were speeches along the way, and there was marching. And there's going to be great video of that that's going to be posted by Spectrum 360 in the next few days. So we'll go to the internet and go to Facebook.com and go to the Spectrum 360 radio program Facebook website, and you'll get instructions on how to see the videos as they're posted. We're making major changes with the internet presence with Spectrum 360. The old website that Spectrum 360 had is no longer available, functioning, and we're replacing it with a brand new website, which is going to have vastly more capabilities than the original one. So bear with us. There are going to be hundreds of hours of video posted on the internet, and also tens of thousands of still photographs and hundreds of hours of audio, too, that will be on this website. It's going to be massive. There's a huge amount of media that is going to be posted on this website over the next several weeks as we build the new website. It's not up right now, but you can always go to the Facebook Spectrum 360 radio program website and stay in touch with us there.
I was sorry. I missed that event. It was a great event. It was great to see Darden Rice out there. St. Pete has moved ahead with their wage theft ordinance, and Pinellas County is actively moving forward as well. It'd be nice to see the other side of the bay get in on that, too, and start thinking about enacting some wage theft ordinances. Hopefully that'll happen, too.
Oh, they have been in previous demonstrations, that's for sure. But, Terry, even though you weren't at that demonstration, you were at the next event that day, which was the Richard Wolf speech. That's Professor Richard Wolf, the economics professor and well-known activist and author. And Terry was there for that, and so was I as well. In fact, I was I had the good fortune of being able to video record that, and that is another video that Spectrum 360 will be posting of the Richard Wolf speech. He's excellent. He's dynamite.
And he really gives a different kind of take on economics than you hear from a lot of the mainstream economists. He examines things from a Marxian perspective, which has a lot of validity. He has a lot of fairly substantial criticisms of capitalism. He is a big advocate of democracy in the workplace, of having worker-owned collectives where workers can make decisions about their business, about their company together. And it's really fascinating. So I think you'll enjoy hearing that when we play it.
Yes, absolutely. I originally met Professor Wolf last year, 2014, in May, when I traveled to New York City to the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, where the Left Forum is conducted each year. Beautiful college, right in the middle of New York City, relatively close to Central Park. And just great speeches by him and all the other speakers at the Left Forum. That's an incredible event. As I've said before, and as I told him last Tuesday night when I met him again, he was on a panel discussion with himself, Christopher Hedges, and Dr. Cornel West. And the three of them spoke on the subject of Thomas Paine and his principles as outlined in the famous pamphlet Common Sense and how they apply to our democracy now. It was one of the most intelligent conversations I've ever heard. It was just fantastic. I did a great video of that speech. And that was broadcast last year on Spectrum 360 and seven successive programs, because we edited into a series of programs and played it seven times. It took seven episodes, seven installments to get
and
through
Dr.
that.
Wolf said he hoped to do something like that again at the next Left Forum, so I hope they do.
Yes, I sure do. He's just dynamite. And one of the things he said when he was at the Left Forum, and I thought this was very, very interesting, was the fact that we live in a democracy, but we don't experience or practice democracy in the workplace. And, you know, I have to admit, I had never really thought about it from that perspective. And I realized that's correct. We don't really have democracy in the workplace. There's a bureaucratic structure. There's a boss, you know.
Very hierarchical.
Another boss, another
CEO.
Boss, an owner, you know, shareholders, whatever.
I mean, some companies that you say if you speak out at all, you're fired. Or if they don't do it that way, they look for things to fire you on.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely more like a dictatorship or maybe a benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah. And think about it. If the workers themselves were making decisions about what the company does, I think those decisions would be a lot different. I think that jobs wouldn't be outsourced. I think maybe damage to the environment and public health would not happen because it's the community. They don't want to pollute their own community. They don't want to endanger their own health.
Well, that's correct.
Remember a couple years back, I actually gave you a painting or a poster, and it said human resources, and it actually had a giant head eating a human. because we are. We're human resources. We're like trees, gasoline, fuels. I think if companies realize that we really are human resources, that there's things about us that is resourceful, they would actually start having the morale would actually come up. And I think the people that work there would actually get together and start wanting to help out more. I think, absences would go down, theft would stop, You know, and but they sometimes refuse to do that because they want all the power for themselves. And so the crew sometimes fight back, and they fight back in their own way with attitudes and
subtle sabotage.
Yeah, subtle sabotage on both sides of the coin. Instead of both people groups coming together and saying, "Okay, what can we do to work as one cohesive unit to make this company the best company of whatever we're doing?"
And it's not just that; it's actually more democratic organizations such as worker co-ops. And that type of thing, and greater union participation in the workplace now, which, according to Professor Wolf, is down to 7% of United States workers are now unionized. That's a very low percentage.
It's very sad. And most of that is in the public sector right now. That's the remaining sector that is unionized to some extent. And that's why the right has been coming after public employees and trying to get people all riled up about the horrible public employees who don't do anything and they have cushy jobs and they have pensions and we need to get rid of them because they're trying to bust the last remaining unions.
Yeah, it's a strange situation. But what we're talking about in terms of a democratization of the workplace is worker co-ops and stronger unions and that type of thing. And worker co-ops, that is an idea whose time has come, which is really starting to increase in the United States. And it's a very interesting and very cool idea. And it's democracy in the workplace. And it's just something that, you know, I don't know, I've always taken for granted in my life that that's, you know, workplaces are just structured the way they are. But then he made the point, we live in a democracy. Why aren't we practicing more democracy in the workplace? So that was fascinating. Of course, Wednesday was Veterans Day, and our friend Jay Alexander had a demonstration in support of veterans at the usual place in Tampa.
As near, he does every year?
Yes, near the military bases there in Tampa. And so that was Veterans Day. And then came Friday, the 13th of November. And Friday afternoon, local time, in Paris, France, there were terrorist attacks by, we're told now, they were ISIS fighters. Seven people, aided by an eighth, attacked four locations in Paris, France. And the latest statistics, from what I understand, 128 killed, or possibly 129, and 352 injured, including 99 critically. 89 people were killed at the Bataclan Music Theater during the terrorist attack. And of course, most people know about that now, and there's been extensive media coverage all the way since Friday late afternoon in the United States, and just continuing on right until the current time for the last 3.5 days. You look at most television news channels, and they've got near continuous coverage of just this one event. So that's been very eventful, and it's already having secondary effects, even here in the state of Florida, which we will talk about in the next segment. And then on Saturday, that was 14 November, just 2 days ago, the Democratic Party conducted a debate with its U.S. presidential candidates, that would be Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Martin O'Malley, at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. It was conducted by CBS News. And staff, do you have any comments on the debate itself?
Well, I actually was unable to watch the debate itself, but I have some comments on the timing of the debate. Many people, including myself, have observed that it was held on a Saturday night, which is not exactly prime viewing time. A lot of people do other things on Saturday night. The next debate's going to be on a Saturday night, too. And then there's going to be one, I believe, on the day after Christmas, which is usually football watching time for most people. So there's been some speculation that the Democratic National Committee, headed by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, is putting them at times where they're not going to be seen as widely, with the thought that that's going to protect Hillary Clinton. They don't want to hear from Bernie Sanders. They don't want people to hear from him. They don't want people to hear from Martin O'Malley. They want to keep their front runner the front runner. And I think that there's a good argument for that's what they're doing, and I think it's unfortunate.
Yes, that's correct. Martin O'Malley's been very outspoken about the timing and the number of debates for several weeks now. Even before the first debate was conducted, he was criticizing that. He's been on MSNBC interviewed. In fact, he was just interviewed today about the terrorist attacks, and it was very interesting.
Going off what Terry just said and the time spots, you've heard me say multiple times on the show, that's why people like us and people that are actually following certain people that are running for president, like myself, Bernie Sanders, that's where we have to get involved with our community and say, hey, it doesn't matter what time it's on, let's TiVo this, let's save this thing. Hey, did you hear what Bernie Sanders talked about? Did you hear what happened over here? Hey, did you see? And talk about it in your workplace. Talk about it in school. Talk about it if you go to church, you know, like afterwards and having dinner. Get off your butt and talk about it. You know, do something about it. It's like we talk about everything else. You say, hey, did you see what happened in CSI last night? We need to have the same passion about the people that we want to actually help run this country.
That's absolutely true. And that's a great idea. You know, you could still have a debate party, have a debate, TiVo it or record it, and have a debate party later at
have
a time that's more convenient
TVs
for a lot
going.
Of people.
One watching. I mean, we do. I mean, some of us that like football, sometimes we have two TVs, one showing one team we like, the other team. Have one that has the debate talking about it, and half the time the game's going boring, so you slide over and go, hey, look what they just talked about. Own it. You know, own who you're voting for. Own who you're fighting for. Because if not, what are you going to blame TV? Like, okay, well, I didn't see it. No, open your mouth. Open the thing that your mom got you in trouble with your mom for speaking too much. Do something about it.
Well said. Thank you, Rebecca Mirasol Kingsford.
And a boom!
Spectrum 360 commentator. And now, segment two on Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 16th of November, 2015. And Terry Weeks, co-host, leads this segment. And Terry, take it away.
And Terry's live in the house with us. We're so lucky.
Yes, you are.
And the crowd goes wild.
Oh, not that again. Strangle her, please.
I'll later. I want to talk about the troubles in Syria have spawned a tremendous, one of the greatest refugee crises in history. And hundreds of thousands of people have been streaming out of Syria, coming to Europe and to the United States. And then we have the attacks in Paris. And that spawned a response here in the United States. It spawned a response here in Florida. Our governor, Rick Scott, and more than half a dozen other state governors now have come out against President Obama's plan to relocate several thousand Syrian refugees within the United States. Governor Scott has said that Florida will not accept any Syrian refugees. The problem is, he really doesn't have any say in the matter because the law is against him. In 1941, way back in 1941, in Hines versus Davidowitz, the Supreme Court ruled that, and I'm quoting here, the supremacy of the national power in the general field of foreign affairs, including power over immigration, naturalization, and deportation, is made clear by the Constitution. States simply can't overrule the federal government on immigration matters. And if that weren't enough, we've got the Refugee Act of 1980. That allows the president to admit refugees who face persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. And that's especially true in an unforeseen emergency refugee situation, which sounds like exactly what we've got here. And finally, the Supreme Court's last big immigration case was Arizona versus the United States in 2012. This was the Roberts Court. This was the current court holding that the federal government has occupied the field of alien registration and all state action, even complementary state action, is impermissible. So the law is really pretty clear here. This is a federal issue. States have no say in it. But what do you want to bet that Rick Scott and Pam Bondi will use our tax dollars to file another lawsuit that they are doomed to lose? Because really with them, it's all about scoring points with the far right and not actually getting anything done. I do want to give kudos, though, to Governor Hickenlooper of my home state, Colorado.
How do you say that name?
Hickenlooper. He announced today that Colorado will still accept Syrian refugees, and he has promised to screen each one thoroughly. So Colorado, they're taking the Syrian refugees, they legalized marijuana, and now they've got a ballot initiative for universal health care. So if they keep this up, I might have to move there, have to move back. I did want to make one other point about the Syrian situation, and that is really it's in our national interest to accept these refugees. ISIS is actually extremely frustrated by the Syrian refugee situation. They hate these people because they're undermining ISIS's argument that the caliphate is the ideal place for Muslims around the world. They would really like nothing better than to see the EU and the U.S. refuse or persecute these refugees. Now, there was some talk that there was a Syrian passport seen at the found at the site of the explosion in Paris, but doesn't that seem awfully convenient? Why would a suicide bomber bring his passport on a suicide mission unless he really wanted it to be found? And in fact, some Belgian media speculated that the passport was a fake because a man was found traveling in Serbia with the exact same passport. So interesting.
They were twins.
If ISIS wants to create a backlash against Muslims, France really was an ideal target. The French are already very suspicious of Muslims because of the Charlie Hebdo attacks. And race relations in France in general have been quite tense for a long time. So really, I think that we need to ignore the shouting of people like Rick Scott and also Ted Cruz, who wants to pass a federal bill banning Syrian Muslims from the United States, because those kind of actions just play right into the enemy's hands. And love is always stronger than hate.
Well, very good, Terry Weeks. I really enjoyed that commentary. Thank you for the information. You know, it reminds me of 9/11, when six of the 19 attackers were later found alive in various places of the world by the BBC, and their identities had been stolen. Interesting, huh?
Always more to a story than meets the eye.
Yeah, I've been suspicious of that passport situation ever since, because that could be anything. It could be a plant, it could be a real passport, it could be a fake passport. It could have correct information, incorrect information. It just makes no sense that they would bring a passport and then drop it.
Yeah, and there's been speculation in the European media and even by an EU official that the terrorists actually were all homegrown. They were not refugees.
Exactly. So that has nothing to do with the Syrian refugee situation. Those were French citizens which attacked their own country. And that happens sometimes. Yes, Terry. Very good.
You're good.
Yes. And let's hear the Jim Hightower commentary for this week, and then we'll come back for a couple more segments here on Spectrum 360.
Gosh, Americans don't need enemies like China when we've got protectors like Obama. In his pitch to get us to swallow that glob of global corporate greed known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, President Obama has resorted to a tacky bit of China bashing. He recently crowed that, quote, under this agreement, we, rather than countries like China, are writing the rules for the global economy. This backhanded slap at a major trading partner is meant to tell us that big bad China would have written global trade rules to hurt the American people, aside from the fact that we and our allies would never agree to such biased rules, even if the Chinese were stupid enough to propose them. Obama's assertion contains two self-destructive bombshells, both tucked inside the word we. First, if okayed by Congress, this TPP scam would offshore a whole new round of America's middle-class jobs, hold down or even lower U.S. wages, flood our market with unsafe imported food, free Wall Street banksters from oversight, and empower global corporations to use private trade tribunals of corporate lawyers to usurp our people's sovereignty. How embarrassing that our own president would claim credit for doing such explosive damage to the American people. I'm guessing that even China would not have done worse. Second, Obama's entire TPP charade is blown to bits by his assertion that we are writing the rules. Who's we? Were you consulted? Did you even know that a tiny group of unelected people have been meeting in secret for 7 years to write rules for us? In fact, only about 600 corporate executives and lobbyists were allowed to be at the table, writing rules to benefit themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a disgrace that Obama is fronting and even lying for these self-serving, kleptocratic corporate powers.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
I'd like to tell my Spectrum 360 listeners about my friends at Ocean 6. Ocean 6 is a company that provides a variety of high-quality packaged seafood, chicken, pork, and beef products, frozen, and delivered directly to the front door of your residence. It doesn't get any easier than that. The food is great, the service is excellent, and I am a customer of Ocean 6 myself. Lately, I've been enjoying using their seafood products, especially my favorites, the jumbo shrimp and the shrimp scampi. Good. To get yours, you can call the same man who provides Ocean 6 products for my family. His name is Mark, like myself, and you can call him at 727-623-8015. That's 727-623-8015. The Ocean 6 website is ocean6.net. Again, that's ocean6.net. Get it? .net. Like the net where that wonderful Ocean 6 seafood comes from. Call or click today and get yours.
Hey, Mark. After hearing that commercial, that awesome sponsor, I want to come to your house and have some scampi, a pina colada, and when you actually posted up that amazing uhuru pie, dude, like, I'm coming to your house for dinner, like, next Monday before the show.
Better go before then. He'll eat all that pie.
That pie and those scampi looked amazing, and I want a pina colada.
I ate all the shrimp scampi that we bought with our last order long ago. That's always one of the two first things that I eat, and then I have to eat the crab cakes and whatever else.
Because when I saw that picture,
so good. I eat it up until it's gone, and then I go to the next thing. So it's gone.
When I saw the picture, I was actually editing a play, and I'm like, dude, I want pie from them, and I want scampi. And Mark's always talking about pina coladas. I just wanted to share that randomly with you. I love you.
Well, thank you so much. And on to segment four, and this is coverage, exclusive Spectrum 360 coverage of the Florida Fracking Summit from Tuesday, the 27th of October, and Wednesday, the 28th of October, 2015, at the Holiday Inn in Fort Myers. Actually, it's a very nice Holiday Inn. It worked very well for this conference. And there were just excellent speakers from all across the country. The Florida Fracking Summit was a very high-quality conference, and it did attract highly qualified and interesting and entertaining speakers from all across the country. I was there as videographer and still photographer and general documenter. And in the coming weeks here, we're going to have lots of videos from the Florida Fracking Summit. And we've been covering on the last two programs the speech by Scott Smith with Water Defense. He's the chief scientist with Water Defense. Water Defense is an organization that was started by Mark Ruffalo, the actor, and then deactivated because he wasn't able to really do what he wanted with that organization in terms of water pollution and water protection until he met Scott Smith. And then they got together in a partnership, and the rest is history. There's a lot of interesting things going on with this. This is the Scott Smith speech, part three. And listen to this. There's an abridged version of the question and answer period that happened during part three. So listen to this, and we will have more from the Florida Fracking Summit next week on Spectrum 360. But enjoy this from Scott Smith, part three.
This is Aliceville, Alabama. Anybody familiar with that? They're basically neighbors to you guys in Florida. Yeah, wetlands, the Tom Bigby River and wetlands there. This is in November of 2013. That was wetlands. That's an aerial view. And this, there's a lot of people in the oil industry that get very upset with me when I show this, and I show it all the more. Now, look at that hose. In Florida, I mean, I live near the water on Cape Cod, and for those of you on the water, picture you, if you spill 10 gallons of oil from your dock, and you put a hose in the water saying you're corralling the oil and diluting it, you'd probably be calling somebody for bail money, or you'd have a court date. But that's their answer. That is unacceptable. And that is not just in November. Once the spill happens, it's not going away for a long, long time. This is 2 months later. Every time it rains, once it's in the soil, every time it rains, it re-oils, it re-spills. And this is what we do. We go in and we test the oil, and we fingerprint it, and we know exactly all the chemicals that are in there. This is Lynchburg, Virginia, the Bakken oil train explosion. And had that train gone the other way, probably about 4,000 people would have been instantly killed. And we need to wake up as a country with the Bakken oil trains. We're fortunate that no one has died yet. And I don't even like to look at my phone because I live in fear that one of these times that corridor between Chicago and New Jersey, where it's millions and millions of gallons of Bakken oil is being transported, if there's an explosion there, it's going to be like a nuclear bomb. In our elected officials, again, have failed to adopt standards because of the economics.
I'm from Lynchburg. How come I didn't hear about that?
Well, I would love to spend an extra hour up here, but I don't want to get people mad because they're probably hungry. But you didn't hear about that because, yeah, I can go back to the oil spill. Hotels, resorts, organic food producers, elected officials, they're complicit. So, what we need to do a better job of is bringing communities together to call out in a professional, respectful way the elected officials, crop producers, organic companies, hotels and resorts. They advertising, the media, that's a great question. In every spill, Exxon, Mayflower, from every spill I've been to, the media will call and say, we can't cover this because our advertising has been threatened. Would it surprise you to know that even NBC said we don't know how to cover this nationally because of our advertising? So we're seeing tremendous, why I am optimistic is the work we are doing with the colleges and the high schools, and these kids are calling people out and they want answers. And that's the way we're arming the next generation in the public. And you never heard about this in Lynchburg.
I live right there.
And I found 200 miles away, but it is a fact that petroleum products save lives every day in the medical community. And what we can dramatically reduce, this ties to the bigger question, we can dramatically reduce the need for this fracked oil or eliminate it by going to solar, wind, and electric cars.
Noah, you mentioned vulnerability to the Floridan aquifer is low in southwest Florida, but my understanding is that our drinking water comes from an intermediate aquifer overlying the Floridan. Can you address the vulnerability of the aquifer that provides drinking water here?
Yeah, actually, in this area, we tap aquifers anywhere from 100 feet deep to 500 or 600 feet deep, and there are a number of aquifers.
And the techniques as well. I think that would be an open question to either of you.
I would defer to Scott. Is that
somewhat of a rhetorical question, I imagine, but
Scott mentioned the necessity to do his fingerprinting of what it is. So
to fingerprint, to look for what you are been testing for, so you have an idea of, it cuts down on the costs for analysis because you're not analyzing everything in the world. You have a fingerprint, wouldn't believe maybe there.
Yeah, again, the lack of disclosure is a direct result of the lobbying influence on the government. And the way we counter that is the public disclosures on the patent and the patent filings. Don't underestimate the greed of the oil industry. So they're filing for patents, and I go right in and find these the patent disclosures. It's all right there. We just have to look for it and build a database.
Noah, in the case of Fort Myers wastewater going into the Coosahatchee, does this contain any chemicals from drugs, including ones that might alter marine life, reproduction, endocrine disruptors, anything of that nature? Are you aware of anything along those lines?
The water before they discharge it to the river and before it's sent to any injection wells should be again treated to the level where you can water the grass with it. So I don't know the answer to that, but it should be treated at the levels that can be put out in the environment before it's put anywhere, either in the river or other
Great. We're going to have some additional Q&A time for both of these speakers at the end of the day, but right now I have a couple of announcements and we're going to break for lunch. The pictures that you're going to see, you're going to eat lunch. There's a buffet set up right outside these doors. We're going to ask that you quickly go through that and bring your food back in here. We're going to eat lunch in here. During lunch, there's going to be photos from a photographer who's gone around the nation documenting oil and gas operations, particularly fracking operations. Julie Dermosky's photographs will be looped during lunch on the screen up front, so take a look at those. Also, I just want to take a moment before we disperse to recognize the people that really made this happen. I mean, obviously, it takes a team to pull something like this together, when I call your name, if you wouldn't mind standing briefly to be recognized, Caitlin Weber, Caitlin, Jessica Crane, and then Susan and Laura, I believe, are also here. Laura's in the back there, and Susan, I believe, is right outside of the room. These four individuals have really done all the behind-the-scenes logistics to make today a reality, and I just wanted to make sure to recognize them while we were all in the room.
And that ends part three of the Scott Smith speech from the Florida Fracking Summit.
I think Scott Smith is amazing. I love the idea of doing citizen science and getting more people involved in water testing and getting the word out as to what's out there. It really scares me that we would do fracking in Florida with our limestone substrate and our limestone aquifer. I think the dangers are just far too great.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of way dangerous. I mean, how many feet down is our aquifer? And when you do fracking, everything I've been seeing, there's the potential of things exploding in the kitchen like water and other lines. What kind of people are actually running our state that realize this is not a good idea?
Well, we know who is running our state.
I know. But seriously, I mean, logically, seriously, one of the things I cannot wait for some grassroots organizations to start popping up, to start fighting this thing, the challenging thing. And just like what Terry did with solar power, I mean, we're surrounded by water. What about wind power? What about wave power? What about changing some stuff and being a pain literally to the backside of our government here and say, we need to stop. And we need some other forms of alternative energy sources.
Well, that's exactly what Scott Smith has been stating. And we'll have more from the Florida Fracking Summit next week. And now to the next segment on Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 16th of November, 2015. And this is an excerpt from an interview conducted by Chris Matthews on Hardball on MSNBC with Robert Redford about his role in the new film Truth. And I thought this was interesting. We're going to be doing ongoing coverage of the issues that are raised in the film Truth about George W. Bush and his service in the National Guard and other related issues. There's going to be some pretty interesting perspectives that are going to be discussed on future Spectrum 360 programs. This is our contribution for this week on that subject. Enjoy. This is about 6 minutes and 43 seconds.
And now he's starring in a new film about a crisis in journalism. The movie's called Truth. It recalls the firestorm about the 2004 CBS 60 Minutes report investigating then-President George W. Bush's service records in the Texas Air National Guard. Several producers and executives at CBS lost their jobs because of that report, including the legendary CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather. Robert Redford plays Rather himself in the film. Let's watch.
Hey, Andrew. I need him.
Well, you're not taking him.
You say that, but here I am.
You got him?
Mm-hmm. Stashed in a hotel two blocks up.
Let's go. Dan, you can't lead your own party. I got 50 affiliates and their wives waiting to talk with you.
I know, Andrew.
Got you, Dan.
You want to finish this off? I've already had three.
General? This is Dan Rather.
General. Sir. Thank you for doing this. Let's start from the beginning.
Robert Redford joins me now. Robert, thanks so much for joining us tonight live. What made you want to get into this hot, talk about a hot issue? I mean, it's the end of Dan Rather, who's a friend of mine, and I'd like to think you are too. Boy, talk about controversy, the media, the world we're in right now with the fights over the debates and the moderators. And the, you're right in the middle of the stew right now, I think. Your thoughts?
Well, right in the middle of the stew. Well, I don't think I'm in the middle of the stew that's going on politically right now. I mean, for me, it's a personal opinion. It feels like Looney Tunes and Not So Merry Melodies. I mean, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of depressing in terms of what we could be hearing, but aren't. Yeah. So, but that's my personal opinion.
But what about the movie? I'm talking about what happened to Dan Rather. Do you think at the heart of it is an investigative report on George Bush's Air National Guard story, which is a hell of a good story. Did he in fact show up? Was he in fact given special treatment? These are all good questions. But then the whole thing came down to the documents that Bill Burkett produced that turned out to be highly questionable, to put it lightly.
Well, look, for me, I'm all about story. That's what I'm about, is what's the story? You know, and who are the characters that embody the story? But for me, at that time, that was a story that I don't think ever got fully told. It was an open and shut case. It popped up and went back down again so fast, you wonder, well, wait a minute, wasn't there more to this? But we never knew until now. So I think what the film does, or tries to do, is to open it up to look at what the full story was and let the audience decide for themselves how they feel about it.
How do you think Rather comes off?
As me playing him, or
no, Dan you're himself? Great. In fact, I will now. You've offered the door. You've opened the door to my applause. Now, I think you really caught him. His formality, his good old boy, his Texas thing combined with his formality. The way he, you know, he's a bit awkward personally. He's a good guy, but he's very awkward. I think he captured all of that. And so did Kate Blanchett. I don't know her, but she just
she's
charismatic. That's all. This is the way she played it. But you really got Rather.
Well,
I thought
Kate can do anything.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was not an easy, it was a challenge for me as an actor, but I enjoyed that because I had to play somebody that was very well known on a nightly basis and everybody knew what he looked like. And if I was going to play him, I couldn't, if I mimicked him, that would be a caricature of him and that would be terrible. On the other hand, how to get the essence of a guy, and you hit some of the points, Chris, but he's very polite. He's very, has a genuine, compassionate exterior, but what I found out, what sat underneath that, was a tremendous kind of a wolf desire to get to the truth.
Yeah.
And so that dichotomy is what interested me.
You know, I look at all your movies and I think about, you're always going for the, you know, the great movies, the series you did about winners, and of course The Candidate being one of them. I hope you do a sequel of that someday. The Candidate, I still think, is the best political movie, and I've seen them all. I think you got that. Investigative reporting, where you have you have the fabulous Woodward Bernstein team. You captured the excitement and the honesty of those guys, the courage to take on a presidency and all his men, and to have them do it just as two young guys. I mean, you really do find the romance in politics and in journalism, and especially when they clash, like this movie shows.
Well, that's because what I'm most interested in is the characters themselves. And with Woodward and Bernstein, when I went into that, and I spent 4 years working on that project, there was a similarity, by the way, with what's happening with Rather and Mary Mapes and Woodward and Bernstein. There's a difference, because with Woodward and Bernstein, they were going after the truth. They were digging in to get to the truth against the odds of an administration that did not want that revealed.
Yeah.
But they had the support of their bosses. They had Kay Graham and they had Ben Bradley. They had support. On this situation, you had Rather and Mapes trying to do the very same thing, but in the end, they did not have the support of their bosses, because if you look at the picture, then you get into that whole thing about the conjunction between corporations, media, and journalism. And I remember, boy, I'll tell you, I'm a big devotee of honest, good news. And I remember there was a time, and I think the film says this, there was a time when the news was sacrosanct. That's what it was. Entertainment had its area, and the news had its area. It was sacrosanct. slowly what happened is that entertainment at some point began to creep into the news, and it changed the dynamic. I think that's kind of sad, because I think news is vitally important.
Yeah, I think you're right about the feature pieces that they do. And by the way, I've never told you this, but I got to tell you, I was in the Peace Corps on my way home from 2 years in Africa. I go to Mombasa in Kenya, and I go to see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I thought I had come home. That was America. You know, the country had changed in 2 years, and that movie was such a cultural, iconic piece. Number two, a little more applause here for Robert Redford. I think Quiz Show is one of the best movies ever made, and you made it. That movie is perfect, and it gets better every time I see it. Robert Redford's done it again with Truth. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And it's at the theaters right now, and we'll be right back.
This is Mark Skogman, host of Spectrum 360. And Cornel West gave a speech yesterday. That was Sunday, the 15th of November, 2015, in Iowa at a Democratic candidate event. It was a barbecue where there was a lot of barbecued meat eaten. And Hillary Clinton was there, and Martin O'Malley was there as well. But Bernie Sanders could not be present, so he sent as his representative, Dr. Cornel West. And Dr. Cornel West is such a great speaker. It's widely regarded now that he actually gave the best speech at this event. And that includes the two actual candidates who are there. So you make your own judgment on this. We're going to play a few minutes of this speech by Cornel West to close out the program. And then we'll come back to you next week with more Spectrum 360. But for now, this is Dr. Cornel West, a favorite of mine.
All of my brothers and sisters of all colors here in Central Iowa. Oh, it's been a magnificent 2.5 days here, and I am so very blessed to be the stand-in and to stand for my dear brother Bernie Sanders, and I want to tell you why. Brother Bernie and I come from a great tradition. The tradition of Martin Luther King Jr. and Albert Einstein. Tradition of Helen Keller and Ella Baker. Tradition of John Dewey, who's the founder of pragmatism, but he was a democratic socialist too. Reinhold Niebuhr. And my dear brother, to me, one of the greatest folk I've ever met in Iowa, his name is Reverend Gil Dawes, who's a Methodist minister who's been struggling for over 50 years and still on fire for justice. And the point is that, you see, democratic socialism is not some kind of alien element. It's organic and indigenous in the history of this nation. Don't allow the ism to get in the way of the love for poor people, the love of working people, the love of people of color, the love of gay brothers and lesbian sisters, the love of the elderly and the children and the physically challenged. It's a question of what kind of human being you want to be. And let us not be deceived.
Yes, son.
But we're living in a transitional moment. All you have to do is look at the establishment and the Republican Party, and you see what? A party having a nervous breakdown in public. Xenophobia everywhere. Defense of hierarchy without accountability everywhere. Lack of integrity, mendacity, and mediocrity everywhere in the Republican Party. But it's the challenge for the Democratic Party is the days of the establishment are also numbered.
Yeah.
The old talking points don't work in the way they used to. The old language doesn't work in the way they used to. Why is that so?
Wow, that's Dr. Cornel West stumping for U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders.
Brother West tearing it up again.
Yes. Excellent. Wasn't that great?
That was amazing.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of good points. He makes a lot of very good points. I just, when I listen to that speech, I agree to it. I agree with almost
point for point exactly the way he says it. It's just very, very honest and very, very revealing. Okay, and next week's Spectrum 360. We are also going to have a news summary and ongoing coverage of the Florida Fracking Summit. And also, next week, coverage of the School of America's Watch vigil and workshops. Now, the School of America's Watch is happening this Friday, which is 20 November, Saturday, 21 November, and Sunday, 22 November, 2015, in Columbus, Georgia, at the gates of the Fort Benning Army Base, and also at the Columbus Convention Center. We will have exclusive coverage of this on Spectrum 360 next week, along with the Jim Hightower commentary. So meet us next week for more Spectrum 360.
Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.